team. Nobody do it like us, kings of the sports list. Cause we tell it like it is, yeah, we the sports king. So listen to us, we tell it all. From hockey to golf to basketball, we the sports king. Nobody do it like us, kings of the sports list. Cause we tell it like it is, yeah, we the sports king. So listen to us, we tell it all. From high school to college to pro ball.
Hello and welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning into Sports Kings Radio. I'm Andy Flint. With me today is my fellow colleague, Jason Whitney. We're going to kick off a little hoops for you guys today. For some of you who are familiar with our podcast, who follow us a little before, we had a podcast for quite a few months, probably about a year, and that was with blogtalkradio.com. It wasn't all bad, but there were some things there that we couldn't really improve. And we've, you know, went on and done our own system now, and we have our own recording means, and we're trying to make this a little better for everybody out there listening. Before we kick off the show today, I want to remind you guys to follow us at www.sports-kings.com. There you can find everything you need in sports. And then we also have our four sister sites. We have Down and Distance for football. We have Pass the Pill for NBA basketball. We have Reading Between the Seams for baseball. And we have Around the Rink for hockey, for all your hockey needs. And they have a nice podcast coming on, too, a couple of the guys over there. And we'll be producing that and getting that up for everybody. I'd also like to toss in a couple of quick plugs. Make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at Real Sports Kings. And you can also find us on Facebook. Hit that like button at Sports-Kings. We have a nice little promotional deal going on right now for everybody. You can register with us on Facebook or Twitter. You can find it at, you know, our Real Sports Kings or our Sports-Kings collectively on both sites. And you can register to win a free $100 Nike gift card from Sports Kings. That's just something we provide for you guys. You just got to go fill out a couple of quick things. I mean, I did it last night myself because, you know, everybody wants to win that gift card, myself included. And it'll take you probably 30 seconds to do. It's fun. You know, you get to answer some basketball questions. There's some other things in there. So check it out. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Hit that like button on our Facebook page. And you can win a $100 gift certificate from Nike. So, Jay, how's it going, man?
Not too bad, Andy. Just trying to get this coffee to work real quick so we can do a podcast. It's better than doing blog talk, right?
I mean, you know. And again, I think Blog Talk is a pretty good system for newer blogs trying to do the sports thing, or any blog that is. I mean, you could be doing a gardening blog if you wanted to, and Blog Talk would work for you. You know, the issue is, and we went through some of this sometimes, is you're connecting through your phone. Most of the time, you know, it's a mobile phone because who really has landlines these days? And, you know, you have things that happen, things that go wrong, and it's a live show, so it's hard to edit. And I don't say anything bad or negative about Blog Talk. I just feel like, you know, we were kind of to that point where we wanted to do this for real, and you know, we wanted to get our own thing going. I mean, you can agree with that.
Yeah, I think Blog Talk, for anybody who's starting off, especially if you just have a blog and you just want to get your voice out, it's a good tool to practice with. And actually, you know, we had some pretty good interviews on Blog Talk. I mean, too bad we didn't have it on Skype. I don't know how that's going to work when we start, you know, when we go out and start getting interviews. But I know we had like Andre Reed, was it Mike Hill from ESPN, and
Adam Carolla.
Adam Carolla, Terrell Pryor. That was an interesting interview. we've had a few of them. So, I mean, and it all stemmed from Blog Talk. So just like you said, you get to that point where you kind of want to have your own thing, your own platform. You don't want to have advertisements or shoddy connection. And, you know, that's where we are today. So hopefully, you know, this kicks off a very successful run of podcasts for the SK Radio Network.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree. And, we've got a lot of good guys at our site and stuff, you know, our network that really make all this worthwhile. And we're going to have some great shows for you guys. I mean, now that we've finally figured out some of these technical things, how to mix our own show and everything like that, hopefully we'll be giving you guys some quality stuff. So let's kick right into this basketball-related podcast here that Jay and myself are going to provide for you guys. We want to jump right in, and let's talk about Jason Kidd in the Brooklyn Nets. We know Jason Kidd played – you know, a handful of seasons with the New Jersey Nets. He's, you know, a legend there, you know, one of their best players, if not their best player of all time. you know, he kind of bounced around. He ended up in Dallas, won a championship there. He, you know, ended his career with your boys, the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best career of his season, or best season of his career.
Oh, so boy.
It's looking like Jason Kidd just retired earlier this month. It actually was funny. He and Grant Hill both retired within the same week of each other, which I found was odd since they were, you know, co-rookies of the year back in, when, 94-95.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they both played 1,000 seasons in the NBA. So after 19 seasons, Jason Kidd's finally retired, and he looks very close to getting a head coaching gig with the Nets already, which is kind of astounding. I mean, you don't see this happen. It's not often you see a guy with no assistant coaching experience jumping into a head coaching job. We watched Mark Jackson do that a couple seasons ago with the Golden State Warriors. But now it looks like Kidd may just have this job less than a month after retiring at the age of 40. What do you think of the odds of this happening, Jay? And what's your whole take on Jason Kidd as the potential next coach of the Brooklyn Nets?
Well, I'll hit on that in a second, but to revert back quickly to the introduction, you did forget, when we do hoops, we are the hardest-hitting show there is when it comes to hoops. I figured I'd add that in for you. Secondly, as far as Jason Kidd is concerned, I thought it was very odd that he gave up 2 years at $3 million apiece. You know, was that $6 million? You know, didn't even think about it, not a summer, not a couple months. Think about it. This is his last contract he's going to make in his career, unless, you know, as we're finding out now, he planned to go into coaching. And they've always said he was, you know, he's a coach on the floor, that kind of thing. So it makes you wonder, did he have a thing kind of lined up? I mean, why just abruptly retire, what, maybe within a month after the Knicks season was done? And I know he played horrible at stretches, but, I mean, I think the Knicks were kind of counting on him to come back and provide leadership amongst, you know, other things. I mean, that was a huge thing this year, is that everything was, oh, Jason Kidd made the difference. Jason Kidd. People forget this. A lot of people were comparing this Knicks team to the Dallas Mavericks team that won the championship a couple of years ago that Kidd was on. So, I mean, it's, to me, in terms of him coaching now, I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of coaching is a little overrated. I don't think it takes rocket scientists. I think it takes players. I mean, you have your few, like you have your Coach Pops and your Phil Jacksons, and I'm actually an Eric Spoelstra fan. I think he's pretty good. You know, you got your coaches that are pretty solid, but you need players. You know, just what it comes down to. If you don't have players, I mean, look at Mike D'Antoni. When he had the Suns players, he looked like, you know, one of the best coaches in the game. He goes to the Knicks and he sucks. He goes to the Lakers, he doesn't have his players. Well, he's trying to do a different system, and look at him, you know. So, I mean, I think it takes players. More so, I mean, he's going to have some assistance. I don't know if Jason Kidd, in the last, you know, 30 seconds of a game, can draw up a couple staggered screens, pick and roll, you know, and then here's the second option, you know, all those coaching things you see in the huddles. I don't know if he can, you know, if he's got that down now, but hey, you know, I know that Darren Williams for a while lobbied for him to be a Net, so maybe this will work out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one important thing that people are missing over the last, you know, handful of days or a week, because I hear everybody saying two things. One, they talk about Jason Kidd being young, and I want to elaborate on that a little bit. Jason Kidd's not that young. I mean, he's 40 years old. Actually, we were at the game in Madison Square Garden when he turned 40 this year. Yeah. Back in, what was that, in April.
Mm-hmm.
So he's 40, which makes him 2 years older than Orlando Magic's new head coach, Jack Vaughn, who was also a point guard. Although he spent some time as an assistant with the Spurs, you know, nowhere near the caliber of player that Jason Kidd was. I think the one thing when you hear Jason Kidd is you hear about how cerebral he was, and he, you know, a coach on, obviously with a point guard, you're kind of a coach on the floor anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing about Kidd is they talk about how it's hard to get a job without the experience. And obviously we watch Mark Jackson do that. Granted, Mark Jackson, it had taken him quite a long time, but he had no coaching experience before jumping into the Golden State head coaching job. And, I mean, I hear people saying that Mark Jackson's one of the better coaches in the league already. And I know you just talked about you got to have the players, which he certainly does at this point. I think Golden State, pound for pound, has one of the best rosters in the NBA at this mm-hmm. point. But I tend to think that Mark Jackson has done a really good job, especially this year. And last year I liked the way he handled things, you know. When I believe he predicted playoffs last season, his first season, and it didn't happen. But he handled himself well afterwards. I mean, I thought he didn't make excuses, and you've got to be able to do that as a coach. But I think that opened the door for these guys to not need the experience so much. There's always going to be a pioneer, somebody who's done it first. And for me, that's Mark Jackson. You know, came in with no experience. Granted, he was out of the league for quite a while. But Jason, just seems to me like Jason Kidd, if anybody's going to get a little, you know, there's going to be an exception a little bit. It's probably a guy like Jason Kidd. You know, he's always kind of been a stand-up guy. He's been around the league for.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the greatest point guards to ever play the game. So I feel like a guy like him, he might get a little special treatment. And, you know, the history he has with the Nets franchise, I think that probably plays into it too. And I don't really know whether he'll be a great point guard or not. But I think the one thing Chauncey Billups hit right on the head on First Take the other day. Yes, I was watching First Take, everybody. I mean, right now. Chauncey, you know, said something about Jason Kidd being able to talk to these players in a way that, you know, a coach, he didn't say this, but I'm saying a coach like Jerry Sloan might have problems talking to players because, you know, he's 150 years old. And that's no disrespect to Jerry Sloan. I mean, he's an older guy. Kidd is 40, granted, but he's just coming out of the league. He knows these players. He has relationships with some of these players. He knows how to talk their lingo. He knows what they're all doing. You know, he's been hanging out with these players. He's been on the planes with them. You know, he's went out to dinner with these guys in the past few years. So he knows what's going on. I think he's got his ear to the street, so to speak. So I feel like that might help him a little bit. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think maybe we're going to start seeing some of these younger guys get brought in? I talked about Jacques Vaughn.
You bring up a couple interesting points, too, about, you know, he might have a little longer leash than the average person. One thing that Kidd was known for is, you know, unlike the rest of the Knicks, you didn't see him, you know, bickering with the referees, you know, over every call or putting his hands on his head or running down to the other end of the court. I mean, the guy, he raised his hand. He got a foul, he raised his hand. And I think that's going to translate well to the next level for him if he's coaching because, you know, you see those coaches that are like loose cannons on the sideline. I mean, sometimes it works, but sometimes you get, you know, it can drive your team nuts. You know, see Stan Van Gundy. I mean, sometimes you're intense. You know, it can lead to your team. You can lead, you know, you take on the personality, you take on the persona.
Where's Frank Vogel at?
Yeah. So, but the one thing I want to touch on real quick about the, you know, the new coaches and coming in with Mark Jackson is I thought his situation was more ideal because you're coming into a younger team where Jason Kidd, he's going to the Nets team that, I mean, I don't know if they can improve. And I know me and our other colleague, Frank Santos, has this back and forth of, you know, I think the Knicks and the Nets are both screwed, but I don't know where the Nets – I think the Nets are so far over the luxury – even over the luxury cap, they can't even do a sign and trade that would bring in other players. I could be wrong with that. Don't quote me. But I know there's so much money. I mean, with Joe Johnson's max deal, with Brooke Lopez, Darren Williams, Gerald Wallace, they have to be. So I don't know if that's an ideal situation for him. I'd rather see Kidd – I mean, he's going to get respected no matter where he goes. He was respected as a player. Why wouldn't that translate to a coach? But I'd like to see him go somewhere like – a younger team, maybe, you know, to kind of bust this, you know, get in there, you know, learn a little better and then go to a better team. I mean, Avery Johnson did all right, but again, that kind of backs my thing of having players. When he was with Dallas, he had players. He actually had some pretty good seasons. And then he went to the Nets. He didn't really have players. Look what happened. So I don't know. I think it's going to answer your question. I know he danced around it for an hour, is I think you're going to see more younger coaches getting chances except for Patrick Ewing, but it's going to be, I think it's going to have to definitely be guys like Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd, Mark Jackson, guys that had a really good rapport with players and had that, you know, that panache, that kind of, you know, respect from his co-players and, you know, in kind of being labeled a smart guy, because you're certainly not going to see someone like JaVale McGee be head coach, you know?
Okay, well, the net salary next season is like $89 million.
Yeah, that's over the luxury.
Well, that's a little bit over the luxury.
I think it's 81, right? It's 71's the cap, and I think you're only $10 million over or something before you hit luxury.
They're out of control. I mean, Joe Johnson's making $21 million of that. Duran, 18. Brooke Lopez, 14. Humphrey, we forgot about Humphrey's 12.
He did make a good point about Humphrey's. Is he could be a good he could be a trade chip at the draft, which I suppose, but I mean, I, you know, because it's $10 million or $12 million,
that's still not helping you that much.
Yeah, I don't know who. I mean, who are they going to give? I mean, a team might give you another big, you know, big contract, but you're not going to get a draft pick out of it, are you? I mean, maybe you could give him up in your 22nd pick and move up to the 18th spot. I mean, I'm not sure what. I know teams will try to get under the cap. I just don't know what you can get for him. Maybe you could try to, you know, call LA up and try to get Pau Gasol out of it, or I don't know if they want Humphreys, but, you know, I guess you can call around. I just don't know how many teams are out there trying to get Chris Humphreys expiring. But, you know, he makes a good point. If you're trying to get under the cap, you know, they could do that. But as far as the Nets go, I don't know if there's much room for growth. In fact, when you got to hope Brook Lopez turns into an absolute stud, which he could. I mean, he's showing he's doing pretty good. But outside of that, I think kid going to the Nets, I don't know. I'd rather see him go to a team with some younger players that he could kind of, you know, probably wouldn't kill him to go to a team like Portland. Not that they got an opening, but, you know, Portland or Sacramento or something with some younger players he could kind of help develop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I happen to agree with you. I think, and actually while I look at it, it just kind of makes me want to cry if I'm a Nets fan. But their salary situation is a real mess, and they've got to win with what they have now, or else they're you know, up the creek without a paddle here. So let's not, you know, not that talking about Jason Kidd and the Nets wasn't fun, but let's move into the next coaching debacle. Well, maybe it's a debacle that we have here, and that's Doc Rivers. I'm hearing a lot lately about Doc Rivers, you know, perhaps not being back in Boston or not remaining in Boston for very much longer, out of fear on Doc's end that the Celtics are approaching a rebuild, and, you know, ain't nobody got time for that. So not for Doc Rivers. So what do you think? What have you heard about the, you know, potentially the Celtics being without Doc Rivers, and what do you think about this?
Well, I saw that rumor, that piece where it said that he's not sure he wants to come back, and it seems like we hear this every year with Doc Rivers the last, what, 3 years?
Yeah.
You know, the guy's got coaching in his blood. I actually kind of liked him as an announcer when he was on, you know, when he did the broadcasting and stuff. But, you know, as far as him not coming back, you got to look at the situation at hand. And the reality is, okay, is what's Paul Pierce? You're going to pick up his – they're saying they're not going to pick up his option. I couldn't fault them for it. I mean, look at him in the playoffs. He was dreadful. Actually, the last couple playoffs seasons, he's been dreadful. You know, he's a warrior. I like him. I mean, there's part of me that can't stand the flopping and all that. But and then you got to look at Kevin Garnett. How much does he have left in him? I mean, from everything that people have talked about him, it's like it takes a struggle for him to get up and play, you know, in the regular season. The team hasn't been a good regular season team in a while. You know, you don't want to keep going into the playoffs as a 6th, 7th, 8th seed. You want to go in as a, you know, a top 3 seed to get yourself some home court advantage and get some easier opponents. And then you look at, of course, the X factor, which is Rajon Rondo, and when he's coming back. If there's anybody who probably could make it, you know, outside of Kobe Bryant coming off an ACL injury and being ready for the beginning of the following season, it probably would be Rajon Rondo. The guy's nuts. He played the overtime with a torn ACL. So, you know, it's you got to look. He's got to assess the situation, and you're not going to really get much better through the draft. You know, it's going to be a weak draft. You know, I don't blame him. I'd be like, listen, I need to see the moves, what you're doing. I'm not going to come back if, you know, you're going to tear our whole championship, you know, at one time roster apart and then leave me with a bunch of young guys like they did in the mid to early 2000s. So I don't blame him. I mean, if this is actually what he's saying, because you know how reports go, you might, you know, anything just pops up. So, I mean, we even saw a report that said the Boston was going to try to trade, you know, KG and Pierce and Doc Rivers would be part of it to go to the Clippers for which, by the way, I kind of like that trade for like DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, and the guard there, Eric Bledsoe. Yeah, so I mean that helps. That would help the Celtics tremendously because you had those guys with Rajon Rondo, and Rajon Rondo is probably a trade chip after that. So I don't blame him. I don't know. Do you believe this report? And you know, do you think he's doing the right thing by saying he kind of wants to wait and see here?
Well, I mean, the one thing is this is how this always seems to work out. Is it's what I've read here, you know, and Danny Ainge has been saying for the past few weeks now that Doc has told him he's coming back, and you know that's always nice to kind of have a player or a coach's word if you're a general manager or an owner, but it's not necessarily the way it works out. I mean, and the one thing I hate about this, and this is kind of seems to be always the way it is it's a source,
yeah,
so some source, whoever the source is. Told ESPN, you know, Doc loves coaching, blah, 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 but he feels like it might be time for a change. So, I mean, that's fine. And I almost feel like Doc may feel that way because if I'm Doc Rivers, I don't want to start. I don't want to coach a rebuild. It's hard when you're a perennial contender and even won the championship back in 2008. Who wants to be there for a rebuild now after 5 or 6 successful seasons? I mean, it's kind of a tough transition to make. Mm-hmm. So, I wouldn't blame Doc if he's on his way out, but do I feel like this is true? I mean, I guess I'm going to take the boring route and say I'm 50-50 on this. I'm not really sure what I believe at this point, but I think even if they didn't pull off that kind of trade, I feel like a Clippers team almost might be a better place for Doc Rivers, because he's got some quality players in Chris Paul, and I mean, Blake Griffin's still kind of a work in progress, but he's got team. And they've got some players. I mean, they have some depth there. Mm-hmm. It's not like they rely strictly on their starters, you know, like the Miami Heat might. But I think, you know, if there's a coach who can kind of bring a team like that, who a lot of people pick to go deep in the Western Conference this season in the playoffs, a lot of people picked him going to the finals, mm-hmm. If I recall correctly. And I had them beating the Grizzlies in the first round personally, so applaud to that. But I feel like a coach like Doc Rivers, I think he's the second best coach that we have in the league right now behind Greg Popovich. And I feel like he, if anybody could push a team, actually, you know where I like Doc is Memphis, brutally honest, because I think he's a good defensive coach. Mm-hmm. Memphis already has that defensive presence. But, yeah, there's options. I mean, there's teams out there. We talk about Memphis. We talk about the Clippers. And I do feel like maybe it is time for Doc to kind of get a change of pace and get a fresh start somewhere where he can, you know, help a team that's ready to be on that next level. And yeah, Boston's, I don't know, man. I think Paul Pierce is done. I think he can continue to, you know, if you look at his box score, his stats, it's kind of weird because he averaged, you know, 18.5 points this season. And 2010 or 11, he averaged just a little under 19. So it was very similar. But I think the way he's averaging these points now isn't as effective as it has been in the past. You know what I mean? Like, I think people look at stats and that's it for them. They're like, oh, no, he averaged more that season. So, I mean, that's not the whole story. I mean, there's a difference between how effective was he. I mean, how did he get those points? You remember Paul Pierce was kind of like your closer.
Yeah.
He could go in. And he's down to shooting 43% from the two seasons ago. And I'm talking about he shot 49%. But, you know, close, he could pick his spot and just tear you apart at the end of the game. He wasn't doing that so much this season. I didn't see him really shutting down games at the end. And you know, it's unfortunate, but the guy's been in the league since 99 or 98, 99. So, I mean, he's just kind of wearing down, and KG's wearing down, and, you know, Rondo had the injury, and they've got some young guys in there. It feels like Boston had a lot of guys that just didn't really know their role on that team.
Yeah, I think what you hit it on the head with the Rondo injury, because once he got injured, it felt like Pierce had to pick up the load or the slack, and he's just too old to do that. He's much better when he's trailing the play and Rondo hooks him up with a sweet no-look pass and he drains a three. I mean, the one thing the guy can do is he's not, you know, he's a pretty good shooter. Yeah, he's not going to, he's going to have his moments where he probably shoots, you know, 6-for-15 and struggles. But generally speaking, when you're on the floor with Rondo, you're getting wide open shots. And if you're he's in the NBA for a long time, and that team, especially when it had Ray Allen, you know, wide open shots. And speaking of Ray Allen, there's a rumor that he would opt out or something and come back. I don't know at this point if you want Rondo or Ray Allen to come back, especially when him and Rondo had a little, you know, they couldn't get along or what have you. So I think, like anything, it runs its course. Like, I'm a huge Knicks fan. I saw in the late 90s with Ewing, Larry Johnson, some of these other guys. I mean, sometimes you just got to pull the plug, and that's the hardest thing to do when you have a bunch of Warriors on your team. And as much as I dislike even KG, it's you can't count out, you know, that guy. He suits up, he wants to win. And in an era with a lot of prima donna players, I mean, you got to appreciate what he does every night on the floor. So, I mean, to be honest, if I'm Doc Rivers, I like the Memphis thing, the Memphis choice you said, because that team needs somebody to come in immediately. But the thing is, they're not going to pay him the money they want. Memphis likes that defensive coordinator, you know, quote coordinator they have. So, but yeah, the Clippers are another spot. Like, Chris Paul certainly stays if you bring in Doc Rivers, right? And then maybe, you know, if you bring in Doc Rivers, Clippers or the Celtics are probably going to let go of Paul Pierce. They're not going to pick that up, or they're going to try to trade him. He'd be a perfect fit to play along. You know, if you can get one more year, you squeeze one more year out of Paul Pierce to play along Chris Paul. I mean, and then you put in, you know, you add DeAndre Jordan. Maybe he matures more with a guy like Paul Pierce and Doc Rivers there, opposed to Vinny Del Negro. I don't know what he brings to the table. So, you know, I think you just got to pull the plug. I mean, you know, it's okay if you disagree, but I don't know. Would you pull the plug if you're Danny Ainge? I mean, it can't be easy if you're a player or a coach to play under Danny Ainge with all the rumors constantly swirling about the team. Like it's been like perpetual ever since like he's taken over, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, I think I would absolutely kind of disband this team at this point. I don't really, because I feel like their maximum potential has been reached now. I mean, I just, at least the Garnett, Paul Pierce thing, and they've already lost Ray Allen. I just almost said we, like I'm a Boston fan. they've already lost Ray Allen, and, you know, now it's like, can you win? That's what you got to look at, I think, if you're Danny Ainge. Can I win a championship with my three main pieces being Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Rajon Rondo? And
need another piece.
Yeah, the answer to that question is no, they can't. And they would need a young, I don't know where the money works. Can they get another piece in there that's good enough to bring them to the championship? Because they tried with all these little decent, nice pieces like
Leandro
Barbosa came in, and Courtney Lee, and, you know, Sullinger had a good season in a bit there until he got hurt. And they had some guys that did some nice things. Brandon Bass is a spark plug here off the bench and stuff. But I just don't see this team's potential being a championship. I see this team's potential, their maximum potential, maybe being the 6, maybe even the 5 seed in the East, which isn't going to bring you a championship. So I feel like when you look at it from that perspective, for me, it's an easy decision to say, you know, let's break up the band. Let's get Rondo somebody in there. Maybe Sullinger turns out to be a sufficient starter. You know, maybe he's a 15-8, 15-10 guy, something like that. Maybe that's his ceiling, which would be okay. And then, you know, I thought they were taking a look at Josh Smith. There was rumors about that going on. So you got to think, you got to assess it from here. Does Josh Smith, Rajon Rondo, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett, can you win a championship with that? Can they afford that? Josh Smith wants that 9-year veteran money. So I just don't know. To me, it seems like it's an uphill battle. And, you know, they're carrying the heaviest bag in the world up the hill. And I just can't see them being a contender at this point. So I feel like once you reach that point, because your favorite thing in the world to say is the worst place to be in the NBA is in the middle. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to either be really bad or really good. So I don't see anything for these guys. Do you have anything else to say on this?
Yeah, quickly. And then we could transition to the next topic here. The one thing they have is Avery Bradley. And depending on how you feel about him, because the first 5 games of the Knicks series, he was dreadful. And then all of a sudden something hit him in the fourth quarter, game 6. And he was just like, where was this all series? So I guess, I mean, if you could try to, you know, use him and possibly Sullinger, depending how you feel about him and his injuries, you know, maybe you could bring in, I think personally they need more of a combo shooting guard that can create his own shot. I don't know if Josh Smith can, you know, necessarily create his own shot. He takes too many dumb shots. I think Kevin Garnett he'd end up having a tumor watching him play. So I just don't know if defensively that team would be nuts having him at the, they'd probably move him to the 4. Well, he pretty much plays the 3-4. He's kind of a hybrid player. And then you put Kevin Garnett at the 5. I mean, defensively that team.
Wait, did you say you meant Josh Smith, right?
Yeah, Josh Smith. What did I say?
You said your boy JR.
Oh, my bad.
You must have had Rihanna on the brain.
I did. on the brain. But, so I mean, I don't know. The thing is, free agents never go to Boston. They usually trade it to Boston. I mean, the best thing I could picture them doing is trying to trade something like Bradley. Maybe you try to trade Bradley and Sullinger. Those are your best trade chips. Try to bring the band back and try to – you got to bring in something. We're forgetting Jeff Green's emergence. If he continues to get better, and he's only going to get better if you have – you know, coming off the heart surgery, and you have well, he's not really coming off it, but if you have him and Rajon, you know, Rajon Rondo back, you know, he's going to emerge. I mean, maybe he is the fourth piece, and Avery Bradley gets better. Who knows? But I still think you have to find another piece in there. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Ray Allen come back, and I guess they get together for one last year. I feel like we've been saying one last year for 3 years now, but I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's what does Danny Ainge want to do? Does he want to wait it out one more year and then dismantle everyone, or does he want to just do it now? That's pretty much all I wanted to say on that. We can move on.
Yeah, I'm good with that. So why don't you guys hold tight real quick? We're going to pay some bills here, and we'll kick into the next segment in a few minutes. Okay, thank you for tuning back into the second half of our NBA podcast here at Sports Kings Radio. I want to remind you all again to check us out at www.sports-kings.com, and you can find us on Twitter at Real Sports Kings, or you can find us on Facebook at Sports-Kings. Hit that like button and make sure you take fill out our little survey thing right now that we have on our Facebook and our Twitter, and you can win a $100 gift certificate to Nike. So if you're just tuning in, we were just talking about Jason Kidd and the potential of him being with the Brooklyn Nets next season and on as their head coach. And we talked a little bit about Doc Rivers and the possibility of him not being with the Celtics any longer. With me, I have my colleague from Sports-Kings, Jason Whitney, and we're going to finish up this show and we're going to talk a little bit about the finals here. Now, as you all know, the San Antonio Spurs took big time game three last night to go ahead 2-1 in the series. They won game one in Miami. Miami came back and pounded them by 19 points in game two. And now the Spurs won by what looks to be about 600 points last night. Actually, I think it was 30. Was it 36?
They're still hitting threes.
Danny Green is still in the gym. He and Gary Neal are still hitting threes, folks. So let's get our we're going to go back and forth here, Jay and I, a little bit and get our takes and our insight and our expert, with the air quote, opinions here on this subject. So what do you think, Jay? What did you see, I mean, last night and more importantly throughout this whole series? LeBron's catching the heat today. I mean, the haterade's falling from everywhere. 113-77 is what the Spurs, the beatdown they put on the Heat last night in San Antonio, and it's getting ugly out here on these sports streets.
As Barkley says, we're dudes with opinions. That's all it is for anyone. I mean, the only difference is these guys, well, it's a big difference. A lot of these guys, you know, they just have their sources with agents and whatnot. But anyways, to get back on the Heat Spurs topic here, the biggest thing that I'm hearing right now, or that everybody's seeing, is Tony Parker going to be able to play game four? If he can't play, I mean, it was an aberration what happened. I mean, Gary Neal and what's his name is draining threes anyways, Danny Green. But, I mean, those guys aren't going to continue to hit threes after threes after threes after threes. And I know that's what they do. But I was watching Tim Legler, who I actually like, break down the film last night. And he made an interesting point. He said there's really nothing you can do. Those were good closeouts. Bosch's hand a lot of times on the pick and rolls were you know, right in their face. And these were shots two feet off the line. When you're hitting it like that, you just, you know, sometimes you just weren't meant to win. Moving forward, I think LeBron James, I'm going to state the obvious, obviously, and I don't want to turn this into a LeBron James, you know, haterade session. But, and it's kind of repeating off of what other people said, you know, you can't just come in and get your team, you know, your teammates involved. I mean, this isn't game eight of the regular season. This is the NBA Finals. And it's kind of reminding me of a couple years ago against the Mavericks when he was struggling. It's like, what happens to him when he gets on the big stage? He has a propensity for shrinking, you know, whether it's, you know, missing, you know, breaking jump shots. Like, get the ball, get your ass on the post, and go strong. You can't tell me Danny Green can guard you in the post. You can't tell me, I mean, Kawhi Leonard's playing great. Don't get me wrong. But I'll take LeBron James. Is there anybody nearly as big as him? It's 6'8", 6'9", 270? No. Get in the post and go strong. I mean, you're going to draw a double, and he's the best passer in the game. I mean, moving forward, if he doesn't be more assertive and just go out and be like, all right, I'm not necessarily I'm scoring 45, but I'm going to be aggressive from start to finish. I don't know. Maybe this person can beat him with even without Tony Parker, because watching him and Dwayne Wade brick, you know, jump shots and him passing the ball around, getting his teammates involved, that's not going to win it. And there was one stretch I saw last night where Dwayne Wade kind of looked him off. He was on the three-point wing, and you don't really see that. And he tried doing some kind of, I don't know, pick and roll on the other side and end up turning into a brick or air ball or something. It's like, I'm starting to wonder if their teammates are starting to lose confidence in LeBron. And quickly, I want to know what your opinion on this is. I saw on ESPN, it was just some writer talking about, should they bring Dwayne Wade off the bench? I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think there's some, you know, it holds some weight when people say that the Heat are better with Bosch and Wade on the bench, and you just spread the court with shooters kind of like the Knicks did, and you have LeBron orchestrating everything. I don't know if you agree with that, do you?
You know, I don't think I do. I think the big picture for LeBron and Wade was always the intimidation factor of having both of them on the court at the same time. And then the real kicker was always supposed to be Chris Bosh, because if you have teams so worked up and worried over LeBron James and Dwyane Wade, and Chris Bosh kind of just gets lost by the defense, mm-hmm. and he can nail his jumpers. What Chris Bosh needs to quit doing, and I beg and I plead and I pray, quit shooting threes. Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't understand. Since when is he a three-point shooter? Like, I don't remember this guy ever taking so many threes in my life as he has taken in these playoffs. Like, what are you doing? I mean, I feel like I need to just, like, have a talk to him where I'm just, like, pointing my finger at him like he's a puppy, and I'm scolding him, and I'm telling, what are you doing, Bosh? Stop shooting threes. Like, isn't – Eric Spoelstra needs to, like, send him to bed without his dinner or something, because he's got to stop shooting threes. He only shot one last night. I mean, he missed it. The biggest deal last night for me was LeBron didn't go to the free throw line at all. Like, no free throws attempted. 15 points. He started off miserably. He shot 7 of 21 for the field last night, which is a lot better than he was shooting. I think he was like 2 of 13 or something. Something ridiculous like that. LeBron has kind of – I feel like this is what happened. Is LeBron lets his game be dictated by what people are saying, which is a ridiculous notion. Do you think Kobe lets his game be dictated by what people say? No, Kobe doesn't give a shit. And neither did Michael Jordan, and neither did most of these like superstar players. LeBron James cares. He legitimately cares what people are saying about him in the media, which is stupid. He's got to stop it. I mean, during that Pacers series early on when they were kind of struggling and people were kind of saying, you know, and they were whispering, you know, maybe Indiana's going to beat Miami. And LeBron, you know, people were saying LeBron needs to get his teammates involved. And he started to get his teammates involved a little. Now he's kind of like, he's like overcompensated that so much to the point where like Dwyane Wade in two of these games has started off super hot in the beginning of the games. And it's because LeBron's letting him run the show. Dwyane Wade is done. Like, I don't know what to say about this dude anymore. I don't know if his career's done, but he's done this series. Like, this season, these playoffs, Dwyane Wade's done. If you get 15 points out of Dwyane Wade, I think you're extremely lucky at this point. Chris Bosh, I think Chris Bosh has actually done a better job than people are giving him credit for. He's just got to stop shooting threes in the crunch. If he can get 10 and 10, I can be happy with that. But LeBron needs to score 30 points. LeBron's goal for each game should be 30 points. I don't give a hell about 18 rebounds or, you know, 11 assists. Get your points. You have to attack. It's time to sway away from that Magic Johnson and go into that Michael Jordan a little bit. He's got to know, because people always say, hey, is LeBron Michael? Is LeBron Magic? Well, to answer that question, to me personally, I think he's a little bit of both. He's a scorer and he's a facilitator. He can do both. He's got to know the difference of what, you know, what time is it? Look at the clock. Do I need to strike? Do I need to score? Do I need to, you know, have a little Kobe Bryant in me? Or do I need to defer and set my teammates up and get the flow of the game going? Because I think he's really good at doing both. He's just got to know, you know, what time is it? What LeBron needs to be here now? And that can't be for an entire game. That's got to switch throughout the course of the game. This team went 66-16 in the regular season. And they had that streak, you know, where they were just killing everybody. And I just can't understand for the life of me. Now, San Antonio is a good team. I don't want to take anything away from them. You know, you're talking, it was a little bit of anomaly last night with these guys, Green and Gary Neal. I mean, come on, like you're gonna what they combined for like 13 threes or something last night, and it's like, and they shot a good percentage. Green was 7 of 9, Gary Neal was 6 of 10, so you're talking 60% for Neal. And, I mean, it's just, come on, and Kawhi Leonard chipped in with a couple of threes, and I think Leonard and Green are doing a pretty good job defensively. But what you said about LeBron getting him in the post, there's been a couple times where LeBron did go at Danny Green in the post, and there was nothing Danny Green could do about it. Mm-hmm. And then they go away from it. I almost feel like sometimes, like, I know you said something about Eric Spoelstra earlier, but I feel like Eric Spoelstra's like drowning. I don't think this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he seems like he's very polarizing and a lightning rod, Spoelstra, for sure. You've heard over the years, but I mean, I generally like him. I think he's a good defensive minded coach. But the thing with Chris Bosh, kind of want to touch back on the first thing you said. He actually started hitting threes. I remember last year against the Knicks, in the corner three, because it's like 22 feet compared to 23.5 or something like that. A lot of people don't mind him shooting that corner three because it's a little closer, and he is actually a good jump shot shooter. But I think their best lineup, I like to see him at the five, LeBron at the four, and then Ray Allen, Mike Miller, and Chalmers. And just push. Because the one thing we're forgetting is they're playing guys like Haslam. He's not going to bring anything offensively. And then you play guys like, well, they've been benching Battier because he's been so dreadful. Norris Cole, I haven't seen much out of him. I think we're kind of overlooking the Spurs. I mean, the Spurs have good wing players all over the place. I mean, even guys like, you know, Tony Parker's pesky, gets in the lane. Not that he's going to be guarding LeBron or Manu Ginobili. He's a little older. But these guys are veterans. They play defense. They listen to Coach Popovich. We're looking at the Spurs like, you know, why is it Miami? You know why? Because the Spurs are pretty goddamn good. That's why. I mean, it's easy to overlook, but didn't they just sweep the Grizzlies? And everybody, you listen to Barkley, he had the Grizzlies penciled in for the finals. I mean, they beat a Golden State team after, you know, coming back after being down something like 12 with, you know, in game one, stole that game, and Golden State was pretty tough. I mean, they got some players on that team, so. I mean, you got the best coach. Popovich is the best coach in the league. You know, he's game planning. And tell me, did you see the interview last night, Flint, when he goes, I can't tell you that?
he kills me. I love the guy. He's funny. But, like, I feel like sometimes when we think he's being funny, he's not being funny. He's serious.
No, I know. That's the funny part. It's like unintentional comedy. Like, you know, the interviews. I wonder if it's somewhat in his head with doing the interviews. Like, okay, he's got to know that people are dying over him, you know, with these short, you know, one and two word answers and, you know, two questions. And it was like two words apiece or something. He's like, we're playing good. I can't tell you that. And then he just walks away. He just beelines back to the huddle. You could tell he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to do these, you know, interviews, you know, from quarter to quarter. But, you know, moving forward, I want to see a lineup of Bosch. And I actually agree with you. I know we're agreeing way too much, and this ain't going to happen. But I think Bosch is getting a little too much heat, pardon the pun. But, you're going against Tim. You're going against Tim Duncan. I almost said Tim Robinson. Tim Duncan and Splitter, Thiago Splitter's not a bad player. I mean, I know people say, oh, he got stuffed at the rim. They did like a per 36 minutes. He's actually like the most efficient or the fourth most efficient center in the league per like 36 minutes. But you know how the Spurs play their players. It's a lot, you know, they play like 10 deep, especially during the regular season. They play all their guys. They're not going to play someone 38 minutes a game like D'Antoni used to do with Stoudemire. They're going to rest their guys because he knows what's most important and they trust everybody. So moving forward, I mean, I certainly could see the Spurs, you know, posing a problem, you know, this whole series because they're not afraid of LeBron. They want to beat the Heat. They know this very well could be their last go around. You know, moving forward, if Tony Parker is healthy and, you know, this is just a small little tweak and he's fine to go, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up, you know, ending this in San Antonio. I don't know if that's a bold statement. I mean, the Heat could come back tomorrow and win by 30. I mean, these games have been kind of like that. But moving forward, if Parker's healthy and they going into Thursday, I see the Spurs winning.
Yeah, you know, and one thing to kind of touch on Bosch a little bit again. This is funny that our conversation's mostly taking place around Chris Bosch. But and I was telling people this too, and I think a lot of people were saying that, you know, Chris Bosch struggled against the Pacers because a lot of times it felt like Bosch on an island alone against Roy Hibbert, who's 7'2", and David West, who's the same size as Chris Bosch, but more physical. Mm-hmm. So I think people looked at that and they were just like, oh, you know, Chris Bosch sucks. I heard too many people in the Eastern Conference Finals saying that Chris Bosch was terrible. And I try to tell people, and, you know, there was, and it wasn't just my idea. There was a lot of analysts out there saying the same things because it was a relatively true statement that Chris Bosch just matched up poorly with Indiana. And he was going to match up much better against San Antonio, which I still think is true. I think San Antonio is a much easier matchup for Chris Bosch than, you know, the Pacers were or the Grizzlies would have been. Because while Tim Duncan and Thiago Splitter, obviously good players, it's not the same physicality that Bosch had to face against the Pacers or Bosch would have faced against the Memphis Grizzlies. Bosch is, you know, Tim Duncan's not as good at being able to get out on Bosch out of, you know, when he's, I don't want to say on the perimeter because I don't want him there anymore. But when he's out, you know, 18 feet out, Tim Duncan, he's good. He's long, but he's slowed over the years. And Thiago Splitter, you know, I don't think that he's that great getting outside too, as where not Roy Hibbert so much, but David West was great. He had an affinity for guarding Bosch out on the you know, the 15 to 18 feet, and he was just giving Bosch a hell of a time. And then when Bosch came inside, he had Hibbert to deal with. So I feel like Bosch has been able to play his game a little more on the outside. But the only problem is he just hasn't really gotten it going, and that's because the Spurs are such a good they play great team defense. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people are missing here, is they're great at team defense. And they don't need Tim Duncan, and they don't necessarily need Tony Parker to have a great night scoring. They do need Tony Parker. I don't think that they can win this series if Tony Parker has to miss it, even with a 2-1 lead, because I think he's the engine that kind of drives that team. But I think that he doesn't need to score 25 points for them to win. He can score 15 points and just get other guys involved, because you're going to worry about him, and he's still going to use his dribble penetration. He's one of the best at dribble penetrating and kicking in the league. I don't care what anybody says. And then you have these guys. They have, like, this crazy confidence. Don't these guys, like Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard and Gary Neal, apparently join the party? I mean, they just got these. I mean, I'm wondering when T-Mac's going to step in and just start hitting threes. It's like – these guys, they just have this confidence, and I think part of that's because they know they have Ginobili and Parker and Tim Duncan, and they know they have Greg Popovich, and just the system. They move the ball. That's the one thing, is Miami, you're either going to get LeBron or Wade or Bosch in the half-court set, and one of those guys is probably taking the shot 80% of the time. With the Spurs, you don't know who's going to take the shot, because they'll let anybody take the shot, even when time's ticking off the clock, like in the crunch. They don't care who takes the shot, because Greg Popovich, I think, in these practices, he instills his guys with these confidence that, hey, if the ball comes to you, you're taking the goddamn shot. So I think they learn this in practice. They know this, and they're all comfortable with each other and confident. I mean, we saw what they did to the Heat, you know, when in the regular season, when they didn't even play their big three, and they still, you know, like, I mean, that says a lot about a team, I think.
Yeah, and coming full circle here too, what I was kind of talking about in the first segment about the coaching and like, especially Jason Kidd, is you kind of take on the persona, the personality, all that of your coach. Outside of Tim Duncan giving his bug eyes and, you know, wanting to fight Joey Crawford, well, it's probably Joey Crawford's fault, they all are kind of smooth. They don't, you know, you don't see him running down the court. You don't see him dressing in clown suits in post-game interviews. You don't see one guy taking 38 shots. And that's got to be refreshing, especially if you're a role player on that team, knowing, okay, I got three guys with Ginobili coming off the bench. I got three guys that have been there. You know, what's his name? Duncan's probably one of the best ever. I mean, most people say he's the best power forward ever. And you have a very highly underrated Tony Parker. I mean, I think people are finally starting giving him his due. But it's got to be refreshing to know, okay, you know, I got three guys that are going to give me, you know, it's not going to be up and down. You're not going to have, you know, a J.R. Smith going nuts or a Carmelo Anthony going 4 for 40. You know, you got these guys that they bring it to you every single game. They bring class. You know, they're not going to, you know, they're going to stay within themselves. So, if, you know, that alone carry a team. And that's why I think they've been so successful. I want to say real quickly for Miami, because I feel like we've been gloating up the Spurs quite a bit. It's not done for Miami. Like, I mean, I know I don't want to contradict myself and say, oh, you know, now I think Miami's going to win. But the one thing we're forgetting is, you know, adjustments are huge. And Miami just, you know, after losing game one, came back and slaughtered them. Game four is going to be, it's not going to be a 36-point game. It's not going to, no team, you know, we're in for a battle. And I think all they have to do is just, you know, it sounds easy, but you just got to make a couple jump shots, and that raises your confidence. And why not do this? Put Bosch, instead of always picking and rolling with LeBron, put Bosch at the five, make Duncan come out, make Thiago Splitter come out, and do pick and rolls with Chalmers or Wade, you know, so at least giving yourself a chance to get some offensive rebounds. When you're doing it with pick and rolls with LeBron, you keep the bigs underneath the hoop. It's hard to get second chances. Not to mention, like you said, they're not as good as coming out and defending the perimeter. Bosch is going to get some open shots if you do some pick and pops with him or pick and rolls. You know, he just needs a couple to go down, get him involved early, you know, make, whether it's through LeBron or Chalmers or Wade, do some pick and rolls with Bosch, get his confidence up, and then, you know, the rest will come. Mike Miller's draining threes. You know, it's just a matter of time before LeBron goes off, and, you know, you hope, you made a good point with Wade, you know, you hope you get something out of him, and Miami's stuck with him for the next 2 years. He ain't opting out, because at 32 years old, he's going to turn 32, or he's about 32, he ain't getting another max deal, and he'd be dumb to give up almost $41 or $42 million over the next 2 years.
Yeah, this is his last big deal, obviously. You know, the only thing I have left to say on this subject is, I initially picked Miami to win this series in seven games. You know, I do reserve the right to change that whenever. Well, I think you have to reserve the right to change that throughout the course. I'll always own the fact that I said Miami will win in seven. That was my initial prediction. If you ask me to predict today, I would tell you that I don't have one yet. I feel like I'm going with whoever wins tomorrow. Even if it's Miami that wins tomorrow and they tie it up 2-2, even though I think the odds are still against them, I still feel like they're going to win in seven games. If the Spurs win tomorrow, I think it's, you know, I think it might be over in five. But,
yeah, absolutely. No, I agree 100% because the thing is, San Antonio, you know, they're going to have all the momentum. And I know momentum's kind of another controversial word, but, you know, I guess it's, you know, take it for what it is. But, you know, the Spurs, veteran team, it's tough to see them, you know, not winning a game five to clinch it, to win it all. But, you know, maybe LeBron has passed that corner because we remember against Boston when they're down 3-2 in Boston, he had one of the most epic performances you'll ever see. So it's, you know, you never want to count Miami out, and certainly can't count out LeBron, no matter what you think of him when it comes into big game situations. But, you know, it's a huge game. If Miami wins, Miami's got their confidence, their swagger, everything's going to be back. And even if they lose game five, you know, they're going back to Miami. They're going to get the home crowd. You know, they'll have, you know, they're probably going to get the benefit of a couple calls in Miami. You know how officials get, they tend to sway towards the home crowd. You know, it's just one game. And we have some buddies of ours that are Heat fans. And I keep telling them, like, hey, listen, you know, it's not over. I mean, I don't want to see the Heat win, but, you know, they're one game from being, you know, this, it seems like every game, Flint, it goes, you know, especially if you listen to the announcers, when the Spurs win, it's like, oh, the Spurs, and the Heat win, they're like, oh, can the Heat be stopped? Have the Heat got the upper hand? People get too caught up into these early games. Let it come to fruition, you know, just let it, you know, because these games don't mean anything. We know, I mean, if you had a gun in my head, I'd say Miami's going to win one of the next two games, and this is going to go to Miami, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. No, and I agree. And actually, just to let you guys know a little bit, we pre-record all these shows. So today when we're recording this show, Jay and I, it's on Wednesday the 12th. And you guys will be hearing this on Thursday the 13th. So today, technically. So the game will be tonight. I'm actually just seeing now breaking. This won't be breaking by the time you listen to this. But Tony Parker has tweeted that his MRI has revealed a slight strain in his hamstring. He's aiming to play in tonight's game Thursday night. So game four, Tony Parker looks like he should be ready to go.
What do you think about that?
I mean, you know, I almost want to say that I think, and this totally seems to me like a total Greg Popovich thing, is maybe you sit Parker, or maybe you reduce his minutes for game four. I mean, if I were a coach, I'm not one to ever take a player at face value when they tell me how they feel with an injury, because how often, you know, does a player just want to play so bad, especially a competitor? Tony Parker's a competitor. You know, he's going to say that he feels fine pretty much regardless of the situation if he can walk. We did see the other last night when it happened, Tuesday night, that he was having trouble when he came back in the game initially, and then he left shortly thereafter. Good thing he wasn't needed. But you know, he was having trouble. He wasn't making the cutting plays and the stuff like that. And I mean, it's a strain, a hamstring. I know to the average person, a hamstring strain kind of sounds like a wimpy injury, but it's a big muscle.
Yeah. I mean, it could affect your lower back and everything. The thing is, I say this, I agree with you. I think they're good enough to keep it competitive. Why risk him doing more damage to it? I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know if he can, but game five isn't until Sunday. He could literally, and as everybody's listening to this, it'll be Thursday. You know, he can have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, four full days off. I don't know how long the recovery, a typical recovery for that is, but having 4 days off, actually probably five, seeing that Sunday night's game is not going to be till probably 8 or 9 o'clock at night. You know, you got almost five full days off. I think you sit them. This series is about seven. You can't just be like, oh, we'll play him. What if you play him and what if it gets worse?
This isn't the Pacers. You know, this is a veteran team. This is a team that actually, this team believes, I don't care what Frank Vogel said, I think the whole series with the Pacers, I don't think the Pacers thought they were the better team. That's my personal opinion. The Spurs and Greg Popovich, they believe they're the better team. And they might be right. And I know they believe they're the better team because it's just how Greg Popovich rolls, and it's just how the Spurs team carries themselves, you know, that swagger. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they might say, hey, and they're thinking exactly the way you just said it. This is a 7-game series. This isn't a 4-game series. Mm-hmm. You know, even if we lose game 4, what's it better, to lose game 4 without Tony Parker or to lose Tony Parker because he aggravates it more and then you don't have him for the series? Because, like I said, I don't think they can win this series without him. So I think my personal opinion, and I'm going to stick by this, is I think Tony Parker, you know, unless he heals a lot by Thursday, by tonight, mm-hmm. I feel like he should maybe sit, or maybe they should, you know, maybe only play in 15 minutes.
Maybe the thing is, I guess you might be able to get lucky. Maybe you start him off, see how he's playing, but you're gonna have to seriously restrict his minutes. I mean, it just doesn't sound good if you have a strain. Why couldn't a strain turn into a tear? Why couldn't it, you know, like, aggravate worse? I mean, again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to try to play, you know, doctor, you know, whatever here. But to me, it's like, play it safe. You're competitive enough to stick with Miami. You got guys on that team, Ginobili, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard. You're good enough defensively to stay in that game. You hope that Ginobili can, you know, have some kind of throwback performance, but I just think it's dumb. I think, and if there's a coach that probably would sit him, it probably is Popovich.
I would imagine, yeah. I think if there's any coach confident enough to say, hey, you know, we can win this without Tony Parker, and it's not the end of the series regardless, so I feel like it's quite the possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, well, I guess we'll see, but moving forward, this definitely is a huge storyline that has been created.
Absolutely. Well, that's about all the time we have. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to us gab a little bit here over the NBA. I would expect more podcasts from us coming up in the next few weeks. We, like I said at the beginning of the show, we're really just trying to kind of set this thing off the right way as we've moved to a new platform from Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, I want to thank everybody that visits our site on a daily basis, www.sports-kings.com, and all our sister sites, including Down and Distance for football, Pass the Pill for basketball, Reading Between the Seams for baseball, and last but not least, Around the Rink for hockey. And I want to urge you guys to go sign up and try to win that Nike gift certificate for $100. You can do that by liking us on Facebook at Sports-Kings, or hook up with us on Twitter at RealSportsKings, and give us some conversation, man. We're always on Twitter. Our our social media guru, Frank Santos, is always up to have a little conversation with you guys via Twitter, answer any questions you may have. Until next time, thank you for tuning in to Sports Kings Radio. Have a great day.
We the sports kings. Nobody do it like us. Kings of the sports list. Cause we tell it like it is. Yeah, we the sports kings. So listen to us, we tell it all. From hockey to golf to basketball. We the sports kings. Nobody do it like us. Kings of the sports list. Cause we tell it like it is, yeah, we the sports kings. So listen to us, we tell it all. From high school to college to pro ball.